to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout.
And I'm Aneke Fitz-Clark, the co-creator of this damn podcast. And I'm back. She, her, right? That's it. That's she and it. Her. Yeah, there's not a third it. One? Is there a past tense? Hers is? Anyways, I'm a librarian. If you bitches have been listening to past episodes, you know who I am. I'm happy to be back.
This week, we've also got...
Hello, my name is Emerald Cashmere with a K, right, Collie? I was born and raised in Miami. I consider myself to be an animation connoisseur based here in New York City. Love things from ukulele to animation to improv and everything in between. And my pronouns are she, her.
In honor of America's birthday, I roll... We take a hard look at the country's shortfallings and how it can be doing better, both with the coronavirus and your education and knowledge. So, Aneke and I discuss the Confederate flag being banned across the nation, and it's beyond about damn time. I've finally caught up on the Umbrella Academy, Soup's Late, which is like a fucked up version of the X-Men, and it gets a thumbs up for me on a few different issues and counts, but none of them including Mary J. Blige, who's in it, but why do I have beef with her? Just how did my That's So Raven like dream about the 2020 election turn out? It's the future I can see. And our librarian in chief, Aneke, is here to help us decolonize our bookshelf with her four easy step process. Time to turn our attention towards our bookshelves because knowledge is power and time to be about it. What you got in your shelves? Also, what do you do if you're on a date or dating someone and they don't have books on their bookshelves? I guess it's just a shelf then. Emerald joins back in the fun to further side-eye America on its birthday. Get ready to gag when you hear about female leaders around the world and their responses to coronavirus. They are slaying it all day, every day. Beyonce was right. Who run the world, or at least who should be? Girls. Plus, at the very end, we will catch up with Aneke to find out what she's been up to, and I'll give you a hint. It's pretty crafty. All this and so much more right here on Minority Corner. Time to learn, laugh, and play. But at least they're canceling, like we said, we were saying cancel cops, you know?
And they get cops, out of my face. Good. Dumb.
And I'm glad that NASCAR is finally getting rid of the Confederate flag. That bases are being... There should have never been bases named after Confederate generals. They were traitors to this country and they lost. And the Confederacy only existed for like 4 years. It was 4 years. Just
half
4 years.
Of these monuments to Confederates didn't pop up until the 30s and 40s when people were going hard on their racism.
Yes, right. So they're not, it's all sort of new and made up, and it's a blemish on our history. It's an embarrassing fact.
Disgusting.
It's when traitors try to take over this country to make sure that they can continue the worst parts about this country, a genocide and slavery, and everyone should be disgusted. There's a reason why when you go, like you can't, it's illegal to hold the Nazi flag in Germany.
I wonder why.
Right. It's a blemish on their country. And instead, what they do is they hold the Confederate flag. That tells you everything that you need to know.
I fucking
get it
hate
out of
the
here.
Confederate
flag. You should be
flag.
Naming bases after the Tuskegee Airmen or the
Hello.
First Nations people who were the code crackers or
Hello.
Helped us win World War II.
Yes. So. Duh. Like, it's just it's disgusting. It's disgusting and it's racist and we need to just call it what it is. We no longer need to have pleasantries about it. If somebody
nope.
even tries to open their mouth about the Confederate flag, all of us need to, including non-black POCs, I see mm-hmm. you non-black POCs, you mm-hmm. exist and benefit from black racism. So I'm holding yeah. you accountable to, along with white people, to say yeah. something, you know?
Yep.
if you have somebody in your family that uses the N-word, if you have somebody in your family that thinks that the Confederate flag is heritage, no, say you're racist.
You would say the same thing for someone who was like, the Nazi flag and the Confederate flag are the same thing, right?
Even worse. Treat no.
Worse. Even worse.
Because the Nazi flag is a flag that took over the country, and it was the leader of the country, it was a political belief. Everybody had to fall in line with Nazis. Confederate flag literally wanted to leave the Americas.
Oh, right.
They literally were like, we don't like you. We're leaving and starting a war with you. They're the enemy.
It's the enemy. You're right. It is absolutely, It is the enemy. And why would we, I'm glad that people are finally, we all knew this. Again, this whole entire, why this movement is so different this time, it's like finally, like, everyone is seeing what we have always known and experienced our entire life. And now, y'all were just kind of waking up before, and now I actually think you're, like, you know, awake. And you kind of started, when you're, like, almost about to wake up, but then they kind of fell back asleep, and now it's like, y'all, it looks like
it's time to wake up. And I just want to clarify, because that probably my last statement was a little extreme. The Nazi flag is terrible.
I love extremism.
I'm not saying that you can't, apples and oranges, you can't really compare.
They're both terrible.
Yeah.
They're both rotten.
Within their own context, that's what I'm trying to say. The context of the Confederate flag in America, they were literally the enemy of America.
Yes. So, I mean, essentially Confederate bad.
Yeah,
kind of like Mary J. Blige's acting, but we don't have time. Is that too controversial to end on?
You have just been no, because I'm recording this podcast with you, and it's an extension of our texting. James has been trying every time. I'll be like, "Hey, James, what do you think of this shoe or whatever?" And then you'll be like, "Yeah, this shoe, blah blah blah." Mary J. Blige can't act, and then like disappear, and I'm like, "Ah."
And then I leave. Smoke bomb. Listen, I just finished The Umbrella Academy. And
I didn't like
that. Oh, controversial. My cousin and I devoured it.
Is it controversial?
I loved it. Okay. For me, Mary J. Blige was the thing that was the sore thumb in it, that she just was sticking out. I guess the reason why I like The Umbrella Academy is that, like, there are multiple women of color in it. The gay character.
One of which you didn't like.
Fair. But you know what was nice is that she wasn't the only one, which then if she was, I would have had to like her. So I was like, oh good, I don't like her, and that's fine because there's other ones. Like I thought the black girl Allison is like, I thought she was so, I just, she was really dope. I don't want to give too much away. I thought she was really dope, but what she could do and just how she fit in. And I just love that, you know, she's a black woman and she's just so central to the plot. And she's a beautiful plot line with her and Ellen Page. They're trying to be, you know, sisters, and she really should be the team lead. It's just her storyline, what they did with her, it's rarely done. The really, like, white guy was just kind of, who's supposed to be the team lead, ended up being, like, really, you know, just typical white man.
I know.
Let me punch this.
You know what it is? I read the graphic novel.
Oh, then I get it. Because it's very different, and it's not, I understand that. Mm-hmm. I totally understand. I actually purposely am not reading anything of the graphic novel. Or
I think that's smart, honestly.
Because for me, I thought it was a really creative way of talking about childhood trauma, mm-hmm. like as the underlying sort of theme, and what, you know, our parents do to us and not living up to their expectations and the control. And it's sort of like a fucked up version of X-Men that, like, they were kids and Charles Xavier was like, go fight this war. Like,
yeah, I know.
You know? And so I like that. And also the gay character, and it was so interesting. Like, I've never seen a portrayal of a gay guy having substance abuse issues. And it's actually a common theme within the LGBT community. Like, it's sort of that thing, like, we don't like to, you know, I guess showcase that there's a certain, like, we like to just show, like, there's been a movement in some ways of, like, just showing gay as just quote unquote, oh, we're just normal, whatever that is. I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah, but I mean, substance abuse is normal. That happens.
Well, and I just feel like I've never gotten to see it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. And I really appreciate that. And just seeing his journey of what he went through.
Because it's one of those things where it's nice to move on from being gay as the center point of the identity or what the struggle is. You know? Yes. We're moving past that now, you know?
It was just the thing that was also a part of him, but the bigger thing was like his issues as husband's abuse, which dealt with from his trauma and his powers that he have. And at first I didn't think I was going to like it because there was only two women on the team, but they did such a good job of just fleshing out all the different sort of characters, and the background extras was super. You know where I be looking.
You be looking.
And it was set in New York, and I believed every minute of it. Even just one-liner people. There was a receptionist. She was the black woman. There's just like all these one-liners. They went back in time to the 1920s. There was black dapper men walking in the background. Ooh, I was like black. What
was that? Just a combination of black and dapper. Blapper.
Okay, yeah. There was some blapper men in the background. I'm a blapper man. I'm not.
Blapper magazine.
So anyways, thank you for allowing me to just get... Mary J. Blige, she's just not a great actress.
We always gotta end on that! Positive.
I guess there's something else controversial. I don't really care for her music. I like that one song where she was sad, and that was it. Like... You're not a fan. Get out of here.
I like Mary J. Blige. I like her. I like her music. I like that she dances crazy. I like that she wears crazy wigs. She has been around since the late 80s.
And I give her respect because she's been around in the game. I just not rush into the movie theater or the Netflix to watch her series.
She's not for you, and that's okay.
Thank you. And I thought she got too much credit in Mudbound. But anyways.
Okay, she is not for you. And it's okay.
Okay, all right. We're going to switch gears and we're going to jump into the corners.
Okay, let's do it.
Anneke's corner. She's back.
Yes. I'm back.
She's going to give it to
I'm
you.
I'm back. Okay, so this time...
gonna give it to you.
I am going...
Sorry, I wanted your theme song.
You know what I was thinking about recently, though? This is like a little thought. This is an aside. What if... So there's been a whole lot of talk about how Biden is looking to have, you know, a black woman or somebody different of opinion be his vice, his VP. And to me, he hasn't really seemed like he's been that into... He doesn't seem that hungry to be the president, to be completely honest.
No, yeah.
I'm getting a vibe. Mm-hmm. What if this is Nectradamus right now?
Okay. Sometimes you be predicting shit, so let's go.
What if he's the president for a year and then he steps down?
Wow, you really predicted some. Okay, that's a raven. Is this what you see in that eye? Zoom in.
And then we have a black woman president.
Right. Well, that's why I'm just like, yeah, like everybody, like I'm so exhausted by people who are still doing their magical thinking. Like, we don't have time for this. Let's get going. Because especially...
I mean, mine was kind of magical thinking.
That's true. But it's the magical thinking that I like. But yeah, like he signaled, like we literally are a stepping stone away from a black woman as our president, which I think would do so much for healing this country. Black women have been the backbone of the Democratic Party, of the one voting bloc that has consistently voted Democratic for decades. And I think just given everything that's been going on, I think it needs to be a black woman or Elizabeth Warren, but I actually think it needs to just be a black woman in particular. But yeah, you're right. Like, I think keeping that in mind as well, and also he's signaled that his Supreme Court justice is going to be a black woman. Like,
I mean,
yeah,
just something food for thought.
Speaking of visions, I had a vision too. I had a dream about election night.
Ooh, was it a good dream?
We won. It was, okay, we won every step of the way. It was amazing. It was beautiful. It was close. Wow. It was close in almost all the states, but it was, if you look at the Reagan map, which was majority red, it was like that, but blue. And we had won in like Texas, like we were winning all of it. It was very close and it was very hard work, but we fucking won. And we won the Senate, we won the House, we won the presidency. There was hugs. It was like the end of Star Wars or New Hope. So
yeah,
it really was. There was celebrations and streamers and parties.
Oh, Jesus. Can you imagine if that happened and then we get a vaccine?
I mean, let's turn this beat around. Let's, Gloria Estefan said it best, turn the beat around.
Turn this beat around. Okay. All right. So, while in the meanwhile, let's do some food for thought, because even if all that stuff happens, we still got to deal with our own brains and our own bookshelves.
True. None of this is going to be we're not looking for a Band-Aid. We're looking to do evasive or invasive
hard work.
Surgery, like, and
yes,
it's not going to be easy, but it's hard. Like, we have a commitment for the rest of our lives to dismantle these systems, and it starts with ourselves.
Exactly. So the first thing that I think that is something easy that we all can do is to decolonize your bookshelf.
Okay, librarian.
All right.
You should have a TV show. Like, Marie Kondo has, like, her thing. You have yours, like, decolonize your bookshelf.
I should. That would be awesome. Okay, so one of the first things that I want to bring up before I give you a quick definition of what I mean to be decolonizing your bookshelf is, first and foremost, I am so sick of people relying on other POCs or whatever minority it is to educate yourself about that. I'm not coming to you, James, unsolicited and being like, can you give me like some tips on gay men? Like, no, that's targeted. That's tokenism. That's rude. Stop it.
Yeah.
We need to,
you do your own thing. I always appreciate, and that case sometimes beats me to the punch. It's like, oh, do you see this documentary about, you know, Marsh B. Johnson and whatnot? I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta
see. you do your own research.
You like tweeted me. You're like, oh, I can't believe you texted me, tweeted me, because you are my own personal Twitter. So
we're in Twitter for each other.
And like, so you were like, ooh, Tessa Thompson just did this on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, I hadn't even watched it, and I loved it.
Own exploration.
You did your own. Yeah, you're doing your own, you know, queer exploration.
I mean, I love RuPaul's Drag Race. Okay, so thank you. So one of the fastest, quickest ways that we get education or miseducation is through our books, you know? You need to go to your bookshelf. You should have books, first and foremost. If you do
Step
not have
one,
books.
You need books.
If you are listening to this podcast and you don't have nary a book, you know what? I'm not going to shame you.
Oh, man.
I will say this is a great opportunity to start your book collection.
Man, you are showing such restraint, because, like, you are...
I'm being very kind. I'm meeting people halfway.
Please, you're meeting them where they are. Listen, you've got... Or listening to Minority Quarter's librarian-in-chief. Like, come on.
I mean, if you are dating out there in the dating world, when we're able to bypass the pandemic in a year or two, whenever that is, when we can all safely be in each other's faces again, and you find yourself at somebody's home... If they do not have books, you can leave. Just go away.
I give you permission. What if all of their books are digital, like they do Audible or Kindle? You need to see their phone?
I don't know. I feel like...
Because I've been doing... I do a lot of Audible.
Now you caught me, because I'm a traditionalist. A traditionalist. I like people with books on shelves.
Because I do have... But I sometimes, because I've been moving a lot, I've been doing a lot of books on Kindle, which is very nice, because I can just highlight. And I'm saving the environment.
You got books,
releasing
though.
Releasing my digital imprint. Yeah, no, totally. I got books.
You got books. But okay, I'll give you that. I will give you that. If you end up in this hypothetical situation to our dating populations... If you end up in somebody's house and they have nary a book, you can casually ask, what's the last thing that you read? And a person will give you that thing. They'll be like, oh, I go to the library. And
oh,
like, okay,
look at this one website. I go to Perez Hilton's website.
Leave. Leave right now. Go away.
Get to a safe space.
Okay. But so basically, if you're listening to this and you're one of those people that don't have books, that don't like to read, you're ground zero. You can start new. You can start fresh. You're like a little baby. So I'm happy for you. It's time for you to educate yourself. It's time for you to get out there in the world. Okay. So what does decolonizing your bookshelf actually mean? So there's an article on NPR, which is excellent. I gave James the link, so hopefully, you know, you can check
that out. I'm
going to
keep it for myself. No, I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. it's written by this guy named Juan Vidal, and he states, books, when people come to them early enough or at the right time, have the power to be transformative. And for a lot of readers, this is the right time. Witness the many anti-racist book lists that are circulating on social media, I know you guys have all seen them, we must recognize the inherent value that good literature has and the ability of language to strike an emotional chord. Okay, so that's why books are important. That's why we value them as educational tools, right? Yeah. So to decolonize your bookshelf, he goes on to say, in essence, it is about actively resisting and casting aside the colonialist ideas of narrative, storytelling, and literature that has pervaded the American psyche for so long. Okay, so let me break it down to you guys in another way that might make sense for people who are still confused.
I am loving this TED Talk right now, by the way. I am so here for this.
I got my pointer and my headset on. I am pacing across the stage.
With your clicker in hand.
My clicker in hand. Okay, so America, there's a little holiday coming up. That's exciting.
I mean,
that we do a lot of sis boom bas and big explosions for, right? July 4th.
I plan on kneeling the entire day.
James, just roll with me for this.
Sorry, sorry. Okay,
let's just do a brain exercise for this, right?
I'm with you.
Eating hot dogs, you know? It's called July 4th, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Independence Day. And that is celebrating America shedding British colonialism. We celebrate leaving colonialism behind, right?
Yeah.
We celebrate it. It's a national holiday. We love it. It's great. So why not celebrate, bring that same enthusiasm to your life, you know?
Yeah.
It's thinking about outside of the box, questioning why we value such things. For example, why do we like the British accent so much? Why do we think the British accent is a sign of intelligence? Mm-hmm. It's not because it sounds particularly intelligent. It's because we were colonized by British people. Mm. So it's baked into the fabric for us to believe it to be a higher class. Right. That's what colonialism is, you know? Mm-hmm. It's when another country comes in, exerts themselves as the people in charge, and then everybody falls in line and it becomes baked into the fabric.
Yeah.
So looking at your, you know, so like, why do we celebrate white male and affluent authors so much? You know, why are there not, why are these three things like expected to be the norm?
Yeah.
You know, it isn't like, you can easily say, Toni Morrison is a black woman author. Nobody's like, Michael Crichton is a white male author,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Why is that? That is a colonizing of your bookshelf. That is a colonization of the things that you read. So we are only, you need to question, right? We are celebrating those who are in power, right? And not the power of our own education and thought. That's what we need to do. So I've created some steps to decolonize your bookshelf. And I know a lot of you will be like, Aneke, you give us great lists of books all the time. Well, you know what? Figure it out yourself. I'm a tired POC. It is time for people to do their own education.
Yeah.
To do their own research.
Yes.
To find books that best fit them.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, to back up the work that you've already been done on this podcast for 5 years, there are lists. You can just revisit some of the other lists.
Yes.
She got lists for
exactly.
you. So you can do that.
I got lists for you.
Question for you. Okay. I'm wondering if in the meantime, you just gave me this idea that I'll start referring to, that white male director, Martin Scorsese, or that white actor, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, two random examples.
You can do that.
I'm going to start doing that.
But then everybody else, don't refer to them as anything.
Right, yeah. Like,
because then it really points it out.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to start highlighting, because you're right. It feels like there always has to be this caveat of like, Ava DuVernay, she's a black female director. I'm not going to do that for, I'm going to only single out whiteness for white people.
Because then it points out how absurd it is that we do it for everybody else. I love that.
Yeah. Because, diverting for, white is not the base. We're no longer.
No, right? There is no base, and that's okay. So I have 4 steps.
Ooh.
Okay. Step one. This is a hard one. Get ready. Look at your bookshelf. Just go over to your bookshelf. And then start to notice some things. Go, how many authors of color do you have on your shelf? How many women or gender non-conforming folks do you have represented? Do you have queer authors? Authors with a disability? So you will notice that you do have a hole.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a hole. even major public libraries have a hole, yeah. You know? Even, you know, if you have one book representing one area, time to get another one.
Yeah.
You know? It is time to recognize the holes that you have in your bookshelf of representation, and let's try and fill it. Let's try and fill that up. Try it out, you know?
I love that. Because you're going, part of the problem is like a lot of people are just getting one story or one direction or one opinion. Like diversifying your life mm-hmm. is going to benefit yourself and everybody else. Oh, I love that.
Exactly. Okay. So moving forward, step number two, make space. Now, this is a controversial one with people, because a lot of people value books. A lot of people think books are like sacred, holy entities. And mm-hmm. I got something to tell you guys. The printing press was created in 1440, making books inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. you yeah. don't have to treasure books as much. I'm telling you as a librarian.
Which is
I'm
huge.
Telling you
yeah.
as...
Yeah, this is big.
You know, you yeah. can throw a book away. It is fine. Recycle your books. Recycle them. Give them to a prison. A lot of times prisons will take book donations. Don't give them to libraries. Libraries don't want your fucking books. Get them out of our face.
I still have books from my college class, like my weather and climate Good. Class.
Do you want those books?
I don't know.
Get rid of those
I'm
books.
I'm treasuring them so much. You know
I
what
mean,
it is?
If a book...
My dream is to be, like, Beauty and the Beast is one of my favorite animations ever yeah. and I want that Beauty and the Beast library one day, so sometimes you gotta fill it with some weather books.
No James, if you had a Beauty and the Beast library filled with books that actually meant something to you and were treasured and beautiful instead of Microsoft 95
hey, you never know, I might need to update my... I've had a Mac for like 12 years, but you never know.
See, I'm just saying.
I am a book
Don't
hoarder.
Get rid
I have
of
pamphlets.
Books that have, get rid of them. Throw them out. If there's a book that has sentimental value to you, keep it.
Yeah.
If even if it's just the representation of a time period and the contents of it you don't like, keep it. Mm. If you really treasured that weather class, keep those books. But if it's a book that's just taking up space, get rid of it so you can fill it with something that is... a new thought, a yeah. new challenge to mm-hmm. the system. Decolonize it. Make space for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, like, too, probably throwing out, like, old, dated, like, if you never returned your high school history book, definitely throw that out, because that is probably some bullshit.
Here.
Also,
exactly.
I don't even know this. This goes back to the Five Bloods. There's a lot of footage that they show from, like, the Civil Rights Movement in color, which is so rare to see.
Oh, yeah. Colorized.
And a lot of times it's purposely done in black and white to make it seem like it was so far away. Like, why in your history book pictures of Martin Luther King are
right.
in black and white to make it seem like it's so far away? We had color back then. There was color pictures
yes!
back then. Yeah. But it makes it seem like it was so far away. And it really wasn't. My no. uncle was one of the... He grew up in Louisiana, was one mm-hmm. of the first kids to go to an unsegregated school. And
wow,
they, sorry to tangent too much, but they were trying to sabotage him. They tried to prove mm-hmm. that segregation mm-hmm. wasn't working. They split up him and the other 12 black kids. And they to try to, that way they wouldn't have any solidarity. They give them the wrong test or like tell them to study chapters 2 through 11 when the test was only going to be on chapter 5.
Yes. Yeah, so fucked up.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. The point is that these things aren't so far away as we think. And if you
they're really, Ruby Bridges is still alive and she's in her 60s. Like that should really, I mean, come on. Like, literally, it was not even a generation ago. It happened to people that are
still
probably
here.
Sitting in your living room right now giving you lunch. So it's like, mm-hmm. this is so close. But also, I want to bring a point to the history books. Throw them away if it's not important to you. But if you're interested in archiving and keeping things as a historical notion so we don't repeat them, keep them.
Mm.
All right.
Kind of like archiving Gone with the Wind. Don't need to get rid of it completely, but putting a disclaimer.
Put a disclaimer.
This is how mm-hmm. things were. This is not okay today. Mm-hmm. It wasn't okay then, but looking at it through a lens of history.
Yes, exactly. So when I'm saying weeding, I'm not also saying throw out every white male rich author that you have. Like, if you really like Michael Crichton, like if Jurassic Park means something to you, Jurassic Park was one of the first major, like, adult, quote-unquote, books that I read as a kid.
Me too!
Keep it!
Yeah.
Keep it.
Sixth grade. I was like, ooh, I'm an adult. I don't understand a lot of the science he's talking about. But
Yeah, but you know, you skip forward to the dinosaur parts. But like, you keep it. Keep those books. I'm not saying that. But if there is an author in there, like let's say Michael Crichton doesn't give a shit to you, but you're just keeping Jurassic Park on there because you think it's cool, no, throw it out. Get rid of it. Like if a book doesn't mean anything to you, get rid of it and think about how you can fill in those gaps and get rid of the colonized mentality of culture. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Open up your bookshelf. Okay, step three. Do your own research.
Oh.
AKA why I'm not giving you a book list right now. Okay? There's this thing. I'd like to alert you guys to this new exciting thing. It's called the internet.
What? How do I use it? What do I? Do I step in it? Can I eat it? Do I lick it?
But wait. So on the internet, there's this website called Google.
Use it in a sentence.
Google a book list.
Okay.
And leave me alone.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so like, do your own work. Stop reaching out. So you can easily go to Google and type in something like Latinx authors or non-binary authors, and lists will be provided. A ton of lists will come up. You'll be able to explore those lists and see what types of themes these different authors are writing about that resonate with you, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun to do these searches.
Yeah.
And then you can take those books, since you can't go to a bookstore, stay away from Amazon, go to local Black-owned independent bookstores, order from them, get these books sent to you, and then it's like a little present.
Yeah.
You get mail. You get a present in the mail. The post office gets some business.
You're supporting Black businesses, too. You're ordering from a Black business. And, you know, funny you bring up Amazon. It's so interesting because, you know, at least for me, I'll speak for myself. I know that I like to side eye and be like, what you doing when I see family members going to Walmart? Our generation's Walmart is Amazon.
Amazon.
Because the other people are addicted to, like, you know, Walmart, like the low, low prices, but it's a terrible company. And those prices come at the effects of, you know, minorities and women and low wages and mistreatment of people. And Amazon's doing the same thing. So our generation, we got to watch ourselves with Amazon.
Get with it.
It's hard.
And I mean, I got to tell myself that too.
Me too. I'm still just ordered something today from Amazon. I'm in the middle of a pandemic. I ain't got a car.
I know. But, you know, if you can order something from an independent bookstore, now's the time to do it. This is the perfect time to do it. And also, I would like to point out that if you do not have internet access or you are unable to use a computer, which is fully something that happens.
Yeah.
Once the public libraries start opening up again and there's online services where librarians will be there to chat with you. Oh yeah, you don't have internet. Okay, so once the public libraries open up again, you can go to the public library and I promise there will be like at least one librarian that is there ready and happy to help you find a book that will help satisfy each filling of the hole of your bookshelf, of your colonized mentality, opening it up to authors that you like and know, okay?
Yeah.
I just really want everybody to move away from pinpointing people who are a certain way to help you with that certain thought process. Like, it's insulting to ask a Black person about a Black author, you know?
Yep.
Like, that's unsolicited.
Yep.
Unsolicited, like that's not great. And like James said, it's heartwarming to have somebody know about something that is your own thing, you know, but in a casual way, you know.
Don't try to Aneke doesn't try to teach me about drag culture.
No,
she just casually mentions things about it and we can have a conversation and a share. And also you're actually increasing the amount of people that you can connect with, you know, because you're having a shared base.
You're
knowing about stuff. You're helping. You're going to do better on trivia because you're going to know shit.
Yeah, it's authentic too.
Yeah.
It's authentic. It's not showy or whatever. So there's that. Okay. And my last one, my last step, step four, share. If you read a book that you like, tell people about it. Post it on social media. Promote it. Promote the author, you know? Put it on Twitter. Say like, oh, I found this book that I really like. You should read it. And let's try and stay away from like, oh, you know, this was a Korean-American book, and I'm emphasizing that. No, just casually talk. This is a book that was written by this person that I like. The content was excellent, yep, you know?
Totally.
And especially if you are white, talk to other white people about it.
Yes.
Because that is where it needs to happen. So it's like a lot of the whole conversation about little kids of color need to see themselves represented. That's step one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But little white kids need to see that everybody's represented and just as valuable as them. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest point of decolonizing your bookshelf and decolonizing your mind, is making sure that you understand that everybody has value, everybody has voice. And yeah, you can, just like what James says is all the time, when there's multiple people representing a certain race or whatever, you don't have to, you can be like, I don't like that one. I don't like number three.
Yep.
And that's A-okay, because yep, you're given permission to, because everybody's voice is heard, everybody's voice is represented. And I just really feel like this is the time we're all stuck at home. Let's work on ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I love that. And I'm looking forward to your show, Decolonize Your Bookshelf, where Neke, I mean, actually, that'd be a really powerful show, because people would be having conversations about what's on their bookshelves, what's not on their, yes, bookshelves. And what's on your bookshelf is really a representation of you and your mind and your history and the ideas. And it's actually a really good show and idea and concept. Honestly, I could see a lot of tears, a lot of growth. And I have a song. I know what your theme song could be. Colonizer, okay, colonizer, colonizer. Boy, it's just womanizer, but to the word colonizer. I realized it didn't really hit because it just sounded like I was just saying colonizer again.
Yes, I'm like, we're celebrating.
Colonizer, colonizer, colonizer. No. Boy, don't try to front. I know that just is what you are.
Boy, don't
try to front. I know just is what you are. You clean your bookshelf. You get the book out of here. You get a new book. You colonizer, colonizer.
A little bit of massaging.
It's not a hit. Usually you're just such a fan of our hits. Get it?
Yeah,
okay.
That one.
Here's, well, you could also play, well, you got to have Kamala Harris on there for an episode, just because she had this is not necessarily colonizing a bookshelf, but she did have a mic drop moment.
Decolonizing, James. Decolonizing.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh, decolonize, don't decolonize, decolonize.
Corner.
We'll put this in the bonus extra backstage pass website.
Yeah, bonus extra backstage.
But Kamala Harris, she said so many of her white friends have been, or white colleagues are coming up to her being like, oh my gosh, I had no idea about all of this, you know, police violence. And she's like, you sound like a colonizer, because you're acting like you just discovered this and this been going on.
Ooh, I love that.
See?
It's good.
She good. Mm-hmm. Anyways. Well, like Kamala Harris said, in an eke, decolonize.
Yes! Open it up, man. Open it up.
Okay, so the job market is a mess right now. We are in the middle of a pandemic, and whether you're looking for a new opportunity or you want to make yourself a stronger candidate for promotion, business skills will help you take that to the next level. So I want to talk to you about the University of Toronto Rotman School of Management. It is one of the best schools in Canada and the world, and it's up in Canada, so you know it's good. If you ever wanted a little taste to try to get your foot in the door to be a little bit Canadian, hey, now's your chance. All without having to leave your home. And if you're from the US, they weren't going to physically let you into the country of Canada anyways. Look at you, smart business person. You should go to business school. Rotman is ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times. Fancy. And in just 3 weeks, you're going to learn how to work collaboratively across divisions. And that's just 3 weeks. The coronavirus and quarantine and shelter in place will definitely still be happening for another 3 weeks. So you've got the time. And you're going to get to network with a global group of early to mid-career professionals like yourself. And again, I think some of us are looking for that new thing to be doing. Some of us have more time than we had expected to be able to have. I know I'm taking classes with different organizations and really trying to utilize this time to level up my skills and skill sets. Never let a crisis go to waste, right? Taking this as an opportunity to pivot into a new direction, and Rotman School of Business could be that exact thing for you. Just to note, if you do live in the United States,
the prices are in them Canadian dollars. So just make sure that the exchange rate is going to work in your favor, i.e. the US dollar price is lower. See, you're already learning a little business right here just listening to this ad. So visit uoft.me/maxfun to learn more and apply. Classes start August 10th, 2020. Start your application today to save your seat. Again, that is uoft.me/maxfun. Rotman. Here's where it changes.
Should I won't wait? Why should I care? You should care because you shouldn't worry. Well, you should worry if you happen to live in a country that does not have female leadership. And you should care because it's just time. So I wanted to take a moment and just celebrate the women who, as Beyonce made painfully clear to us like 10 years ago, who run the world, girls. Like, and that's who they should be. She was like warning us. Like, Beyonce was literally just the Cassandra, the canary in the coal mine, screaming to let these women run the world because they need to be. So, like, 4 out of 5 of the countries who have had amazing coronavirus responses in terms of low amounts of deaths, low amounts of just like people getting it, they all have one thing in common. And do you know what that is?
What is that, James?
Based on what my opener was, they were women. They're countries led by women.
They were all women.
So I want to highlight them and what they have done and just sort of like give some snaps to them. So first one, let's go to New Zealand, who's just been crushing it. They are definitely number one. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, who has just been making headwaves. First of all, I believe she is the first head of state to have been pregnant while in office, which is just like, there's layer. From what I'm like, how could that possibly be? That's like, you know, and someone had mentioned they like, and she just has pretty much been like, listen, this is a non-issue. Like, yeah, I'm having a baby, but I'm still, you know, doing my job. And so she's also really young. And there's also, well, we'll get this to that in a second, but she essentially has met the ambitious goal of not just like curving or bending the curve or what. She's like on a mission to eradicate the disease from New Zealand 110%. And she's pretty much really close to that goal. She didn't want to just control it. She wanted to eradicate that. And And I mean, she put New Zealand was in lockdown as early as March 20th, which is actually looking to end because they handled their business. So she imposed self-isolation on people who were entering New Zealand really early. So if you came in, she was like, great, welcome. You go sit in a corner for 2 weeks because we need to, you know, make sure that you're okay. You know, smart things.
Right.
And that was only when there were only at that time just 6 cases in the whole country. She was already being like, oh, hold on, let's, you know, I've been knowing about this coming in from China since like, you know, November. So we're really close. Let's, you know, put you in quarantine. So, Jacinda Ardern, Prime Minister, she also has been addressing the nation via just a casual Facebook Live session that she's just been doing on her phone.
Like,
oh my God. And she did one after putting her baby to bed. Like, there's something just so comforting about that. Like, she was wearing, like, I know it's not about, like, you know, don't ask about just the dress, but she was wearing, like, a very just relaxed sweater that was just very just, like, you know, at home with the prime minister, and she would doing these Facebook Lives, so meeting the people where they are, and she would emphasize, you know, she would connect with the citizens' anxieties. She offered apologies to anyone who was startled or alarmed by the emergency alert that had announced the lockdown order. And she said, you know, there's no way, I don't know if I can do, there's no way to send out these emergency civil alerts on your phone. Shrimp on a Barbie. She didn't say that part. But she said, there's no way to send out these emergency civil alerts on your phone with anything other than a loud honk that you heard. And she said that was actually something that we discussed. Was there a way that we could send this message that wasn't so alarming? Like, just caring and nurturing. She's like, sorry that was really loud, but we needed to like reach you. Nothing we could
do. Oh my goodness.
She then reassured the nation's children by making an announcement in April that both the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny were essential workers.
Oh my gosh. How wholesome.
Yep.
I love
yes,
that.
Yes, right. Like, I just, there's just something, again, there's a humanity sort of aspect to it. And there's this sort of this nurturing approach. So right. they just literally have been doing like one of the best jobs, just really low rates of infection and death there. And they're about to reopen. So then mm-hmm. let's kick it over to Germany. I don't know why. Nat was Australian. There. Oh, Germany. Now here comes my German. Here comes my Australian accent. Well, New Zealand, Germany. So they've had a lower. So Chancellor Angela Merkel, fan favorite, Chancellor Angela Merkel. They've had a lower death rate than both Britain, France, Italy, and Spain. So any of the other countries that are in Europe that you'd put on the same caliber. She stood up early. I remember when she said this. She stood up early and she claimed that she calmly told her countrymen that this was a serious bug that would infect up to 70% of the population. She came out and she said that. She was like, 70% of the people are going to get infected. To then say, we need to take this seriously. So if we didn't do anything, 70%. And I remember clutching my pearls. I'm like, whoa, like what? No, like this is, you know, mid-March when she said this. And so it woke everybody up to like, okay, we got to take this seriously. But she was very calm, but she was, you know, people have been really appreciative that she's been direct, honest, and empathetic. So there's something about that. Those, you know, direct, honest, but also, again, there's that human, I'm going to lead you through this, but here's the realities of the situation.
Yeah.
And her government considered a variety of different information and sources in developing its policy. So they were taking in a lot of information from a lot of different sources, including the epidemiological models, where it had data from medical providers and the evidence from South Korea's successful programming of testing and isolation. So they're just taking in all the data and information to assess. They weren't just like,
a small group
of people. It was a diverse group of information and people. And as a result, the country has achieved a coronavirus death rate that is dramatically lower than those of the other neighboring countries and Western European countries. I mean, like Spain is right there, Italy is right there, and nowhere near. And she called on Germans to work together to keep each other safe. I mean, it's so weird, but it's like, of course, that's what a leader would ask for. Like asking them to come together to keep each other safe. And here's one of the things that is just, you know what her background is? She is a trained research scientist.
What?
So it's like, of course she, you know.
Oh my goodness.
And I think we need to sort of reevaluate who we need. I mean, this is why I'm a huge fan of a diverse Congress. Like there's a, you know, a chicken farmer recently ran for Congress and won. There's a, you know, army vet who recently won, you know, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, she was working in a bar. You know, we need a diverse group of people coming together from different backgrounds.
Coming in from different
areas. We don't
areas.
Need just, you know, lawyers and people who studied political science. Like that's not, we need people from all. So I literally was thinking, I was like, man, someone who had training as a nurse would make an amazing president in times like this, you know?
Yeah, it's so very true. And like, also just thinking about a robust staff in general, to your point, like bringing in people from different aspects, different walks of life to come in and give their advice and professional opinion on different topics. Yep. When you run into a situation like this, like you said, it would be extremely helpful to have a scientist on the team to help consult. That's incredible. Yeah.
So let's kick it over to, we're going to go over to Finland.
Finland.
So Finland is very fascinating right now. So for many reasons. So Prime Minister Sanna Marin, she's 34. She's fucking 34.
Love
and
it.
She's a prime minister. I am 34 and I'm not a prime minister. But you know what? Don't be compete. Be unique. Run your race. So Finland essentially has like all four of the female-led parties. Oh, sorry, give it away. Mm. They have four major parties. They're all led by women right now. all of their parks. So they have like mainly, and they have working amongst, even though they're from different parties, they're a coalition coming together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it also too, she's made it part of her goal is, I think they also just recently ended homelessness in Finland. They just gave everybody a house. And now that people have, and once people are able to get, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You have, you know, food and shelter, then you're able to then go out and do things. Exactly. And it's actually more expensive to have homeless people in the same way that it is more expensive to not have people on healthcare. That it's just more expensive for us to run that. And also there's the being a fellow human community person. Let's put our money to good, our taxes to good use. But also too, just like, I don't want to go off on a tangent too much, but like, what the fuck are our tax dollars going towards? Like, we have all this money for like this war machine, and we're literally, our country isn't able to protect us. The U.S. is, it's embarrassing. Our system just doesn't work. What did we put all of our tax dollars towards?
It's so incredibly embarrassing. And I feel like something like the situation that we're in right now is a testament to that. I actively think about how other countries see us right now.
Joke.
And if I were another country, I would laugh. Mm-hmm. I would laugh, and I hope, and I've said this to multiple people, I hope that our tourism goes down, because I hope that if anything else, this pandemic has proved, like, why would you want to go there? Because their systems are so messed up that people successfully took the street to self-proclaim that the quarantine is over.
Yeah. And also, it's like, why would you want to come to this country that like has like made it very clear that if you're, you know, not white, we don't want you here underneath the current leadership.
Exactly.
Like,
what,
like, or just the treatment that we've been having for our essential workers, our people who are at the meat, like our immigrants who are working in these meat packing factories who are dying at record outbreak sort of numbers. So this country just really cares about rich white people, essentially.
So very true.
So in Finland, they've had fewer than 10% as many deaths as nearby Sweden. Sweden, I like to highlight, has been, okay, so you know, a lot of times, like, the Republicans will be like, we're not Sweden. Well, now the Republicans are trying to be like, but look at what Sweden's doing. So Sweden essentially has been very lax. They haven't been putting any, you know, they don't have a stay at home order. It's very lax. It's sort of like, oh, just do your best. And people are just kind of going about their lives and their days.
Oh, wow.
And this will not surprise you. They have a high infection rate. Like, they're not as high as other places. Like, people are kind of being somewhat responsible. But out of that, in that region of Sweden, like, you know, Finland, Norway, and all that, like, Sweden has just some of like the highest numbers. So she also has been using social media influencers as key agents in battling the coronavirus. So, I mean, just really cool in terms of her taking advantage of, like, meet the people where they are, you know? And so she's been using the social media influencers as key agents to help get the message out, because not everybody reads the news. Not everybody reads the press. And
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah, so she's inviting influencers of any age to spread, you know, fact-based information on managing the pandemic. Like, man, this would be something, you know, we could, you know, get, you know, Kylie Jenner on, you know, doing an Instagram live, like, using their resources, like a coordinated effort with, you know, the CDC to using these people's platforms for good.
Yeah, exactly.
So Sweden and England, like I mentioned, have had high coronavirus death tolls. And I mean, it's because they pretty much have been following just their epidemiological models by their own advisors. So going back to a lot of these other leaders, they're having when you do that, there's fewer channels of dissent from outside experts, right? You don't have anybody who's challenging those opinions and ideas. So a lot of these other female leaders have had a diverse, you know, group of people that they're pulling for from information. So now we're going to go to Thailand. This has been a lovely just sort of journey around the globe to all these.
A little tour.
So the president of Thailand, Tsai Ing-wen, she presided over one of the most successful efforts in the world at containing the virus. So they were using testing and contact tracing and isolation measures to control infections without a full national lockdown. They didn't have to do it. They didn't have to lock it all down because they just were like, oop, we see what's coming. All right, everybody, this is what we're going to do. Blah, 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 blah. So she introduced 124 measures to block the spread without having to resort to lockdowns that just now are become common sense ideas everywhere else. They had aggressive testing, aggressive, you know, contact tracing. And yeah, so the country acted fast and they started testing back on December 31st because that's when the information was really coming out.
What?
I mean, the U.S. was also notified on December 31st. So what did she do? She took that information, was like, okay, great. Let's put a plan into action. Like, duh.
Yeah, exactly. All it takes is just recognizing the trend.
Yep. And she,
Gave
regular government press conferences informing citizens about the virus, which helped prevent panic, you know, just providing people with information. Mm-hmm. And her approval rating, she just had recently won her second term, and her approval rating has gone from, originally it was 54% before the pandemic, and it's now at 61%. So, and you're seeing this in a lot of other countries with strong leadership, that there's a rally around the flag effect that happens, that like, Trump had a initial bump and then it just is, you know, falling back down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, just two more. So the prime minister of Iceland, I'm going to butcher this name because there's a lot of letters together that doesn't make sense to me. So I'm going to assume the prime minister of Iceland, Katrín Jakobsdóttir. That's her. She knows who she is. You know you, girl. And she's not in it for the fame. So I know she's listening and she's like, oh, that's me. And they provided free coronavirus testing to all of its citizens. I mean, as you're hearing these things, you're just like, oh, yeah, that should totally just be a thing. Why is it so fucking hard? And
exactly.
In proportion to its population, the country had already screened five times as many people as South Korea. And South Korea was like one of the – been very praised for how much, you know, testing that they were able – that they were doing. And – they did even better job, and they had a very thorough tracking system, and they didn't have to do a lockdown system as well. So it's like, if you put in these preventative measures, you're putting in these lockdown systems because it's too late. The call's already inside the house. Like, it's too late.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. I don't understand that. I've constantly been looking at the progress, and to your point, like, in Thailand, they saw it in December.
Yeah. What a difference
and started,
that would make.
Like,
well, and there was a recent report that had lockdown initiatives started a week earlier, there would have been 36,000 less deaths already here in the U.S. 2 weeks earlier, it would have been about 54,000. So, and like, could you imagine December 31st?
Exactly.
Different world.
So many fewer deaths.
So then last one I want to mention is Norway's Prime Minister Erna Solberg. So had a very innovative idea of using television to talk directly to her country's children. So she also was just talking directly to the children, held dedicated press conferences where no adults were allowed. So she could just ask just the kids were able to ask questions from around the country, and just also explaining the time, explaining why it was okay to feel scared to the children.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I think I was just going to say, like, the common trend is obviously, like, these are all women leaders, but I think that, like, hashtag preventative measures,
yeah, right,
and like recognizing solutions,
yes,
that are working around the world,
yep,
is what is successful.
Well, and
in all of these strategy plans,
hands down. And so, when we're looking at sort of like why, like you were talking about, you know. There was the chair of global health at the University of Edinburgh Medical School wrote an op-ed in the British Medical Journal, and she said, the only way to avoid groupthink and blind spots is to ensure representatives with diverse backgrounds and expertise are at the table when major decisions are made. And so it's, again, heightening that fact of, like, I've always said this. Everyone benefits from diversity. Literally, lives are saved at this point from diversity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I said that when, you know, there's bad marketing, when, you know, you have, remember there was that, like, face mask thing that was just, like, black people lips? Do you remember that? There was like a mask.
I think so, yeah.
And it was just like, was a black hood, and it was just, it looked like, you know, black people lips.
Or, I do remember that.
Or the Abercrombie and Fitch ad that was like on a little black boy was wearing a hoodie and it said, you know, coolest monkey in the jungle or something. And so again.
Oh my goodness, I remember that hoodie.
And I said even back then, or like when you have a movie that is making a when you have diverse people that can say, oh, nope, don't want to do this. So even in media, it benefits, people benefit. Like literally lives are saved from diversity because you have different groups of people who think different ways and know different pieces of information. So, you know, having female leadership definitely signals that there will be, it tends to historically show that they'll, if you have a woman at the top, tends to trickle down because they actually just tend to, even that happens in movies as well, that people have cited that when there's a woman at the top, the cast and people behind the scenes will tend to be diverse as well, that you have more so as opposed to just when it's just, you know, white dude. And these women are able to also, I feel, provide a sense of like empathy, care, and nurture that is of course needed in a time of a pandemic. Like, this isn't a...
Yes, it's so very true. It's so very true. And it's like the reason why, my theory as to why it leads to more diversity is because when you're in a position of leadership, you can look and reflect on your own experiences as a woman being excluded, left out, etc., and can therefore have foresight and think and be considerate about, okay, in this picture, who's being left out? What's not being considered? What aspects, what angles have we not looked at this from? Where I feel like oftentimes, like, and this, unfortunately, we're in a scenario where this is like the worst strategy plan, but you know, when men are in charge, with, and giving our current leadership as an example, it's like a big, I just feel like it's a show. Yep. Like it's a production. Yep. It's like, you're not considering anything from different aspects. In fact, you're not even thinking about the most important thing or considering like professionals or like doing the smart thing of looking at countries who are successful and literally just mimicking what they're doing, taking all the positive solutions that have been happening around the world because it is a global pandemic and has happened in other countries before it got here, and having enough foresight to implement those solutions beforehand.
Yep. Yeah, 110%. Absolutely. I do want to say that like just because you have female leadership does not necessarily mean that your country will be of success. And I only actually want to point at that in the U.S. because there's been several female governors and female mayors who have been slow to act or stopped their stay-at-home orders. Like the kid,
Las Vegas,
the mayor of Las Vegas, the hot mess of her, wasn't she just like, goodness. We'll be the first example to see what happens. And they're like, well. She was like something to the point where she's like, well, I'm not a scientist, I don't know. And they're just like, oh God. Alabama's governor, South Dakota's governor, they never put a shelter in place, stay-at-home order, and they have all these outbreaks in their meatpacking industry, and that's been a whole other just hot mess of a situation. So, yes, just because you have a female in charge, if you're looking, you're like, ooh, thank God I got a female governor, unfortunately, you have to check to see if they're Republican or not, because unfortunately, partisanship, and it's become a partisan issue, and it should have never. This should have been the thing that unified us. This should have been the thing that brought us all together, and this is showing just how fractured. We are literally in a cold civil war right now. We are in a cold civil war, and it has just drawn the lines unnecessarily. But I do want to celebrate, you know, the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, London Breed in San Francisco. Both of these are black women. London Breed, she announced a state of emergency on like February 29th, which is when
she wasn't messing around.
New York should have done it because how different things would have been, you know, had, you know, that had been 2 weeks earlier before. So going back to like the male leadership, on the one side, when we see that 4 out of 5 of the best country responses were led by women, 4 out of 5 of the worst country responses were led, well, actually all five of them were led by men. But I want to point out that 4 out of 5 of these countries who have the highest death rate and infection rate, we have us in the US with Trump, Putin in Russia, in Brazil, Bolsonaro, and Boris Johnson in the UK. And the thing that I want to point out that they're not only are they men, but they have dictator like autocratic populist like leaders. And so to show the danger, because again, what these other women had, like, autocrats don't want diverse opinions. They want people who are going to say, yep, that's a great idea, who are not going to stand up, you know. And it's, there's a lot of this the strong masculine idea of, you know, don't wear a mask because it's going to look, make you look weak. Like, there's literally been there's been conservative news sources who have been supporting what Trump not wearing a mask because it makes the U.S. look weak. And so, like you were saying, it's this show. We've got to show that we're strong. When you're sick, you need nurturing. The nation is sick, which is why I think, like, we need, like, a nurse as president would be so perfect for this, because they would understand the science and you take care of it. When you're, you know, sick, you don't, like, oh, yeah, go. You can't punch this thing. You can't bomb it. You can't shoot it. It requires nurturing and care that just none of the, those nations have, or we definitely don't have.
It does. Can you, and it's so analogous to, like, can you imagine being, like, in a hospital bed and your doctor just being like, hey, I'm super bravado, bye. And you just be like, wait, but what about, that's not nurturing, dude. Bedside manners is super important, and the nurturing aspect is so, it's also important to getting better.
Yep. Well, and, like, you have these other leaders who are not making it about themselves, where all of these other leaders, there's an egoness to it. At least Boris Johnson, he got he got it and then came back around and was like, whoops, okay, we'll do a little bit better about it. But they still too late. Damage is done with your shitty sort of leadership.
Right.
So
exactly.
I wanted to make this a plug to celebrate, for one, these female leaders. It makes me sad because it's 2020 and the U.S. still hasn't had a female president. And you look at all these other nations here, just Jamaica, or was it Trinidad and Tobago? It was either Trinidad and Tobago or Jamaica. Oh, I think it was Trinidad and Tobago because it's the island that my peoples are from.
I think it was Trinidad, Yeah, I think it is.
Just have, they have their first female president as well. And we're just consistently, you know, we're supposed to be this, like, cutting edge nation. And I think it's just, this has shown the facade of everything that we already knew it was there. And now it's just completely, the emperor has no clothes. It is completely just naked and everyone can see that, like, and so it's time. It is so time for us to have female leadership in this country. It's past time.
Yeah, this is true. I agree.
Well, thanks for listening. And who run the world? Some women.
There are a few women out there who are doing it and doing it good.
To quote Beyonce from the Lion King CGI remake, lioness, attack. Or nurture. But anyways, attack them with love and nurture.
I started listening to Ono, Ross, and Carrie shortly after I broke my arm, and the doctor had told me I'd never walk again.
I was allergic to water.
Addicted to wheatgrass.
I knew it was time to make a change.
There's something about Ono, Ross, and Carrie that you just can't get anywhere else.
They're thought leaders, discoverers, founders,
healers,
luminaries.
Ross and Carrie don't just report on French science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. They take part themselves.
They show up so you don't have to.
But you might find that you want to.
My arm is better. I can walk again.
6 months, no wheatgrass.
Just go to MaximumFun.org.
Thank you, Ross and Carrie.
Ono, Ross and Carrie is just a podcast. It doesn't do anything. It's just sounds you listen to in your ears. All these people are made up. Goodbye.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal, and all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome.
All right, that's enough of that.
We got this.
Aneke, before you go, I know that you've been doing a lot of other things. You are, you know, just a well-rounded woman. You are every woman.
Thank you.
That song?
Renaissance woman. I'm every woman. Whitney Houston, Chaka Khan actually wrote this song.
Speaking of, there was a Jeopardy question, and it was about, I died. Yes. It was supposed to be like, who is Chaka Zulu? And they said, who is Chaka Khan? They're like, leader of this African tribe. And they said, who is Chaka Khan?
It's not good.
But anyways, you and Chaka Khan have something in common because you are both Every Woman. And what are you up to, Every Woman?
I'm really into crafting lately. So, I mean, I've always crocheted. That's been like my thing. I've been like a crocheter, and then I made paper flowers. That's what I was doing for a minute.
I still talk about your paper flowers as if it was my wedding.
Thank you.
I had a great time at your wedding. There's many highlights, but those flowers, and you look great, but those flowers stole the show.
Thank you.
Our dance was amazing.
Hey. Those flowers were my handiwork, so they can steal the show. I have no problem with that at all. No problem. But I've been embroidering lately.
Oh.
And I feel like I'm getting really excited and interested in all the different types of embroidery that I'm doing. It's mostly like embroidery art. Like, I'm not really like embroidering pillows or jeans or whatever. I'm just like getting a piece of fabric, embroidering it, and then I'm tracking it on Instagram. Mm. So, I mean, you can pop in, look at my Instagram page, Ineke. That's it, at Instagram. Perks of having an unusual name. And there we go. I mean, that's all I'm really... I mean, I'm also doing Nice Tan stuff. Keep abreast of Nice Tan Comedy Troupe, where we just released recently. So Juneteenth, I'm sure you guys will be able to catch it. Making fun of celebrities and their insincere kind of videos where they're like, I take responsibility sort of stuff. So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, I have two things about your crafting that it just made me think of. If I can put my Dina Lohan hat on for a second.
Oh, here we go.
I'd like you. I'm always pushing you. I am the momager like, you've never
like Mama
asked
Rose
for.
Or whatever on Gypsy Rose.
Yeah, oh my God, I am. Oh my God. So I think that we should definitely get you an audition tape for the next Making It show.
Okay, here's a question. No, James, I auditioned and I got denied in the worst possible way, too. They sent me an email. This is the worst part. Okay. So I auditioned. I sent my thing kind of lazily. I could do a better job.
Okay, see, can I help you make the tape?
But here's the thing.
I'll bring the lights.
Yes, please. You're here now. So yes, you will help me. But
yay.
I got this email from them saying that I didn't make it, right? But then they go, sometimes people drop out. You never know. And I was like, that's rude. Why are they going to send that out to people? That's like such false hope.
I think it's false hope. You don't know that because they do. Sometimes people do. As someone who's been on the casting side of things a few times, it is true. And honestly, too, with the reality TV shows, a lot of people will tell you it does sometimes take auditioning a few different times. So it's good because sometimes they just need to keep seeing your face. And a lot of times, like there's people that I've done Big Brother, like I've auditioned for Big Brother a few different times. And there's people who they've auditioned for Big Brother like six times before they get on there. And sometimes it's just a matter of
But that's one thing. But to say, hey, you never knew somebody may drop out for thousands of people, like, come on. I don't think so.
I see a door open.
I'm not to that level.
And secondly, on so many times on this podcast, we're like, ooh, better embroider and put that on a pillow. It's almost...
That's true. I can literally do it.
You can literally be like, oh, I'm going to put that on a pillow.
I can do that.
Bam!
I can
do that. You can send it to people or like do things. I love it because that's really funny. Like, put that on a pillow. Bam! And you actually have done it.
I put it on a pillow.
Oh, so good. Yay.
I know. This was so much fun being back, James. Thanks for having me.
The door is unlocked when it comes to you.
I built this house with you, so I
you
would
got
like
the
to
keys.
Hope so.
You got the keys.
I was trying
girl.
To be sweet about it, but
you just come
I'll
on
add a little sour stank on it too.
Yeah.
This is my house. This
I mean, I wouldn't be the key. Listen, and I could be in the middle of an episode and you could just come on in. You got the Zoom link.
I'd be like, hey, I'm here.
You got the microphone.
I'm in the background opening a refrigerator.
You literally just come walking by in the middle of an episode, like, you know, talking to one of the other co-hosts, and you're just
like, do you got any milk?
Oh, did you see what Tyra Banks did? Oh, I finally got around to watching the end of How to Get Away with Murder. We're talking about something completely different about, like, black people in tech. You have your microphone all hooked up and everything. You just join the Zoom call.
Yeah, I just pop in. I'm like, hey, Zoom bomb.
I'm still here, bitches.
I'm back.
I love it. Well, anytime you want a Zoom bomb, you are more than welcome to.
Oh, thank you. And I will be back.
And we know we need to talk about, we both need to eventually we both need to finish watching How to Get Away with Murder, and we have to talk about it eventually.
Yes, eventually.
And I can't
this
even
ever
get the episode.
An actual TV show. I'm for reals coming back. I'm putting that on the record right now.
Oh my God. Yes. Well, of course. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm here. I'm here. Oh, I was just taking a break, taking care of the baby.
I know.
Yeah, of course, there wouldn't be one without you.
Well, I love both of those ladies, Aneke and Emerald. So great having them both here on this show as America turns older again. It kind of feels like this 4th of July, it's sort of like one of those birthdays that end in the number 7, like 17 or 27, 37, 47, where you're just kind of like, ugh, whatever, I guess it's another birthday, right? Just very blasé, uninteresting, and couldn't give two shits. So much is going on, civil unrest, pandemic, Lord. But I hope whatever you do this 4th of July weekend, I hope you do get some time to reflect on how you're going to decolonize your life and help to make this country what it's supposed to be, to help it live up to what it's supposed to be. Equality, equity for all. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for all. We can definitely turn this beat around for sure. I believe it. I'm having a That's a Raven vision about it right now. Also, if you are also just a big thing to all my folks who are in New York, everyone in New York is like, oh my God, I'm hearing fireworks. Like, ooh, is it the CIA? Y'all, calm the fuck down. I love you, New York, but you ain't that special. Everyone's been hearing fireworks across this nation because 4th of July has been leading up. People are bored. Fireworks are cheap. And everyone's just been lighting up fireworks for the past month. So I hope you are safe. Do it responsibly. Really, honestly, if you're not a licensed professional to be doing fireworks, you really shouldn't be. But please remember to be safe as you are going out there. If you are, coronavirus is still a thing. Please wear a mask, social distance. Coronavirus don't care that you want to barbecue and eat fireworks and stand really close and sing into each other's faces. Really quick, I do want to just highlight one thing in the fact check. So Finland did indeed end homelessness. It is a program that's called Housing First, and essentially is just working to make sure everyone has a house. Also, while they are a part of this housing program, they have to then look for a job and just find ways to also support themselves. But essentially, once they have, again, a place to live, it'll free them from the stresses of not having a place to live. It is possible. See, I had a vision about this. Okay, well, that is the show. Be sure to write a review for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Share out this podcast on social media. Tag us in it. You can get involved in the conversation. I am trying to chat with you all and all the different social media platforms that we are on. Really appreciate all the wonderful reviews and the shout outs that you all have been giving on social media. I love it. We love it. We're so appreciative of it. And there's also Minority Corner Kids Playground on Facebook. A lot of new folks have been joining on the daily. So again, stay safe out there. There's a lot going on, and take care of yourself and those around you. Do as much good out there as you possibly can. And I love you all. Thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together we are the majority.